This is Doc Gallows and the Machine Gun Carl Anderson, and you're listening to Turnbuckle Throwbacks with Phil, Jay, and that pain in the ass Choppy, and that's just
too sweet ski.
Woohoo!
What this network needs, this network gets. I promise you that.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the main event of the evening.
Broadcasting live from Shaolin, Staten Island, New York City.
Freak Show Central.
Where's that?
New York City.
It's the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast with Phil, Jay, and that pain in the ass, Choppy. On Rant EM Radio, proud member of the Shining Wizards Network and Dark Satellite Media.
Vapors, right?
You got the vapors, yeah. Episode 410 of the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast.
Yeah.
Live. We'll live the tape, right, Jay?
We are live the tape today.
RantEMRadio.com, Rant and Team Media, part of the Shining Wizards Network, part of Dark Satellite Media. I am Phil.
And I am Jay.
And it's Father's Day week. Well, it will be Father's Day weekend when you hear this.
When you're hearing this.
So taking a hiatus for the weekend. I'll be in New England.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Are you sorry?
No, actually, every time I've gone to New England, it's been amazing. The food there is great. The people are good. You know, just the accent is just god-awful sometimes.
Well, I'm not going that far up. I'll be in Connecticut. I'll when I pass Titan Towers, I'll give a wave.
Yeah, give it the old one-finger salute.
Right, exactly. Anyway, so yeah, so I'm taking a... Yeah, this is... I mean, for the summer, Jay and I are going to be taking a couple of weekends off, and just because the world is opening up again and our lives have changed a little bit, Jay and I, socially, so we have to, you know, adapt to our new surroundings. And let's be honest, you know, it's once in a while, we're doing this 9 years and we do it every week. Take a breather. We're not going to stop giving you content, though.
No.
We're going to, like tonight, we're going to, you know.
It's going to force us to get creative.
Very.
In a sense.
And this is what this is another part of the branding that is Turnbuckle Throwbacks. That's what I wanted from the get-go. I wanted to do stuff like this so we can expand and give you guys the best content that we can give. And we're working harder anyway because some of our content was taken from us from when they switched over to the cock.
Yeah, the goddamn cock.
Cock. So then, apparently they're not going to be up to snub until like August from what I'm hearing.
Well, and like I said, I mean, especially with tonight's throwback, you know, at first I was upset, but now I'm really kind of interested about folding back this onion a little bit because this is interesting stuff.
It's interesting because, we'll talk about when we get to the throwback. But I mean, without giving it up right away, it's interesting because the parties involved have, you know, do stuff in the States differently, and on top of that, this was not, there was no internet. There was no dirt sheets at this point. I don't think the Observer didn't come out for another couple of years.
I think it was, is that there another year? Could be another year. I think it was 84.
Without looking it up, yeah, Meltzer, as we do the, we're watching the pre-show for NXT TakeOver In Your House.
In Your House,
with
yeah.
Sammy Brand Muffins. Who's this, who's the dude with him? Do we know?
No, not offhand. Okay. Is that the guy, that's not the new Raw announcer, right?
It might be, I'm not sure. But that's definitely Sammy Brand Muffins.
Yeah, I tell you, he looks better without the curly hair, Sam Roberts. And actually, I'm a fan of Sam Roberts. I think he's actually kind of interesting.
You mean this Sam Roberts, Jay?
Yeah, this.
This is the last professional broadcaster, Sam Roberts, and you're listening to Turnbuckle Throwbacks with Phil Rea and Choppy on Rant EM Radio.
That's yeah, right. That's Sam Roberts. Primetime Sam Roberts. Sammy Brand Muffins, as Jim Norton calls him. I'm sorry, Jay, you were saying?
I think the Observer started in 84.
This is before the dirt sheets, and Jay actually kind of like gave me the kick in the ass when it comes to stuff overseas. That you know, I have all this footage at my disposal, that we're not tapping into. So,
excuse me, this just in, fact check false. That is since 1983.
So the dirt sheets were out at that point, or mm-hmm. just Meltzer was anyway.
Meltzer, at the very least.
Did Meltzer cover the event, or do we know? We don't know, right?
Since it just says 1983, Wrestling Observer. I'm looking really quick. He didn't cover the event. Everything I looked online, I didn't
see.
You
have a computer there instead of using your phone.
I know.
Oh, okay. Just yeah. All right, baby steps. Again.
Working
baby
in tech,
steps.
Technology
baby steps,
here.
Baby steps. Baby steps. Baby
shiny
steps.
Light in front of me.
Baby steps. Baby steps.
No, everywhere I looked online, I didn't see Meltzer commenting about it. At least, you know, live. You know, as it were, as a, because you know, pulling the breaking the fourth wall as we like to do here. You know, I look to a lot of stuff. I used to be a reader of the Observer. I used to get it secondhand, which is pirating.
The only time I ever read it was if someone sent me like one of my tape trading guys would photocopy one for me.
He shout out to actually I just ran into him recently too. Shout out to this, my buddy Chris Stylin. He awesome guy, and he used to bring it in every Friday. I think it was Friday. He used to bring it in for me, and it was like 4 pages, you know.
Yeah,
and it was actually pretty wild. And even the story of Meltzer, I mean, whatever side of the aisle that you fall on, you know, like what he does or doesn't like what he does, the idea of he was doing what APTA was doing, but for fans that really wanted to know more, you know, APTA did everything great to talk about them in character and all this stuff. And APTA is what, Pro Wrestling Illustrated?
Yes.
So everything that he did was good. But Meltzer, I actually, you know, if you're in the business, you don't like Meltzer because, you know, he's never spent a second booking and wrestling and all this stuff. But you have to admit, he absolutely has his finger on the pulse. And what he says does carry weight, whether guys want to admit it or not. So, you know, when we do stuff here, one of the first things I look up is as I try to find something that Meltzer's, you know, what he's investigated about and what he reported on. And, you know, you do your own research after that. If it's true, great. If it's not, then, you know, journalists are like weathermen. They're allowed to be wrong sometimes.
Yeah, of course. And, you know, to be honest, it's, I don't know, it's, for me, anyway, as I got older, I got more bitter. And everybody hates on Meltzer. I don't want to hate on Meltzer because it's not really his fault per se. I mean, it happened, and I think he's gotten to the point where he's established himself as a guy that had his hand on a pulse,
yeah,
and did something that you know.
Well, he and this is just, you know, my take on it. He's somebody that kind of got thrusted into where he's at. Like, yeah, he was the guy that started it out of his basement, what have you, and you know, did become a leader in that sense,
right,
of dishing the dirt and all the stuff that you want to know about your famous wrestlers and, you know, contract and who they're talking to, you know. So he did know that, but he there was nobody else in the field, so he became the leading guy in that. And, you know, and he got some stuff wrong and whatever the case may be after that. But, you know, I think he does. I agree. I think he kind of gets a little bit of a bad rap sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. And I don't want to, but this is, you know, for me as a kid, you know, and I'm a couple years older than you are, I didn't get any of that stuff. So, I mean, all my stuff was either through the magazines,
yeah,
or there was a newspaper, writer called the Spoiler? I think his name, well, I forgot.
The Spoiler sounds familiar.
He wore a mask. Well, in the Daily News.
The Daily News. It was on
it was Friday night. It was Fridays or Sunday.
Was it
wasn't the Spoiler. It was something. The Slammer.
The Slammer.
The Slammer. So he would start posting shit. And then all of a sudden, that turned into 900 numbers. And then that turned into other things. And then, of course, by the time 1990, I want to say 5 or 4 maybe, they had forums. Which are still alive today, like it's
RSPW,
yeah, all this other shit, Gerwick and all the other ones. But that we could do. That's another podcast.
Yeah,
the history of dirt sheets.
Well, like I said, it's essentially just a written form of more or less, you know, what we do, and you know, hundreds of other shows where you hear something and then tear it apart and try to analyze it as is. You know, it's just, you know, and to me, especially in the 80s, that's what makes, to me, that's what I love about going back and really kind of opening it up a little bit, is just like you put yourself, and I said this about the Collision in Korea thing, where you put yourself in that time frame. Like, it's a fascinating thing. And to look up, you know, the schedule that these guys had, and you know, we're talking about 1983 for the throwback, like, you know, it's an insane schedule. Like, I mean, the G1 in and of itself, these years are just a crazy, backbreaking
right
schedule.
I mean, the tours, the reason why the Gaijin got paid so much is because they toured. When they toured, they were there for a couple of weeks. It was like, you know,
yeah.
And they got compensated for it because, you know, you're going fucking, you know.
Yeah. Well, this
14,000 miles away. You know?
This tour that we're going to cover is over a month long. It's,
yeah.
And that's...
Yeah, well, G1 is a month long, yeah, still. To this is the precursor. We'll get into that. It's Hammer's birthday today, too. And I think, I know I mentioned on the show, on last previous show, but yeah, Michael is 14 today, and it's he's one of my main inspirations for the show. And I'm glad that he's a part of it, and I'm glad that he's still in my life. And I'm glad that I was able to get him his Lucha Brothers for his birthday. And I said, "You want me to get you?" He wanted the both figures, the tag team together. I was like, "You want the cases for him?" He's like, "Nah, I'm gonna open them." I'm like, "I'm paying all this money you to open them."
Yeah,
I figured he's 14.
He wants to play with him. Why not?
He wants to display him.
I was just gonna say,
yeah, he wants to display him. So, yeah. So we're gonna have some fun tonight, and while we're away, and still give you guys some good content, because this is something that I've been wanting to do for a long time. But it's on New Japan World. It's Jay found it on Daily Motion. It was on YouTube.
Yeah,
that's where I found it. But I forgot, and Jay was like, "You know, it should be on it should be on New Japan World." And I'm like, "You know what? I've never even gone that far back.
Yeah,
I've gone as far as the 90s because, like I said, I didn't start getting back into Japan until like 2013.
I was just gonna say I was gonna lead me into a great question. When did you discover?
I discovered Japan in 90, 91. My buddy Dave Strobel, shout out to Dave. Dave was getting tapes like me, and he got all the old Japan shit, like Vader and Hansen and Brody and but the 90s was Misawa, Kobashi, you know, all my favorite Kobashi, and Kawada,
mm-hmm,
the Four Pillars, you know, it's and then of course Great Muda. And we knew about Muda. Kintsuki Sasaki,
yeah.
Jumbo Tsuruta,
yeah, Hashimoto.
Shinya Hashimoto, yeah, like all these guys. And I just you know, there's Kings Road and Strong Style, and it was nothing like. And then of course, like, he got some of the older shit with Tiger Mask and Dynamite Kid, uh-huh. and I was like, oh my god, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen in my life. At that point, Tiger Mask and Dynamite Kid was the greatest match I've ever seen in my life. At that point, until I discovered more wrestling, of course.
Yeah,
you know, like the technical wrestling. That was like. There was no flash. There was no pyrotechnics. There was no gimmicks. There was no. I mean, everybody had people had characters, but it was they based on these characters.
Yeah.
Like Tiger Mask is like 4 or 5 masks long now. You know.
Yeah.
Like Masao was Tiger Mask. I think it was the second one too. Yeah. But it's like, you know, these guys are like, and then you had all these Gaijinin masks. You had Benoit was Wild Pegasus.
Yeah. Black Cat.
Black
Eddie
Cat
Guerrero.
Was Eddie Guerrero. Owen Hart was the Blue Blazer. Like you had guys that would. You know, and I didn't, and when you read about, and then 2013, we interviewed the guy Emerson. He wrote the Brody book, and I was like, holy shit! And New Japan just started getting back big.
Yeah,
you know, Nakamura was big, and Okada was coming up, and I was like, oh boy, this was good. And then Bullet Club formed that year. So it was like, wow, this is fantastic. And I'm a faction mark. There was factions and tag teams all over the place. You had Chaos, you had LIJ, you had Suzuki Goon.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, this is fantastic. And then, you know, and shout out to Mega Powers, Dave Powers. Dave was big into the genre. So Dave's been there, and then, you know, that's how I met Rob. I met Rob through Dave. And Rob got in it, and it was like, this is fantastic, you know. But I discovered New Japan and Old Japan in like 90, 91. That was my bag. And
yeah,
Vader and Stan Hansen. Stan Hansen was my favorite.
To me, it started with I knew about it in the late 90s, in the sense of from the magazines, and it was just all hearsay. I didn't know. I wasn't really a big tape trader. I didn't really know anybody. But I knew about it. ECW was a big one. WCW.
Right.
I knew the main stuff, you know. It wasn't until I want to say the early 2000s when you can get the FMW. That was really kind of my really first, you know, interaction. I remember eBay, you know, and now it's funny, you know, you're little bit older, but like I'm gonna date myself. Like I remember when eBay first came around.
Sure.
And like I found, you know, the IWA King of the Death match with 95 with Foley. That was like the greatest tape I probably still can find it somewhere in my parents' house.
Yeah.
But I loved.
I converted my tape to a DVD.
Oh.
I probably had the same tape you did.
And
copied it from somebody.
And, you know, and I remember just being so happy about it. But that was really kind of where it started and stopped. And then the FMW stuff. New Japan in and of itself, I really didn't know until, you know, the internet age. And YouTube, and you know, it's funny. I kind of land on both sides of the argument with licensing stuff and YouTube and all this stuff. But you know, at the end of the day, like I remember so many nights in, you know, my first apartment, you know, just laying up, not you know, can't find anything to watch. You go into YouTube hole and just watching old clips of, you know, Doc and Gordy and Vader and New Japan, you know, and Stan Hansen and Brody and Abdullah, like the wars with Brody and Abdullah in Old Japan, you know, like I that was my introduction, and we just, you know, we just watched the match today, and I for some reason I really enjoy watching a match with Japanese commentary. Just because of the...
Well, we did watch the English version.
Yeah. Which Kevin Kelly did a great... We'll talk about it.
Yeah, we'll talk about it.
But I remember it never really bothered me about watching it with the Japanese commentary because it added to the excitement. It added to the drama of the match to see, you know, that because, you know, Japanese culture, very reserved, very, you know, very respectable, but... Even the commentators getting big into it and all this stuff. So it probably wasn't, for me, it was probably maybe give or take around the same time, just when, you know, this little faction, the Bullet Club, was being formed. You know, I knew about Carl Anderson. I knew about, his name is escaping me right now. Who was his other teammate? He was part of the Machine Guns.
No, it wasn't Machine Guns. It was Giant Bernard.
Yes,
They were Bad Intentions.
Yes.
Yeah.
I remember seeing him over there, but it was the other, I can't think of the other muscular guy, bald head.
Luke Gallows?
No. It'll come to me.
The Giant Bernard, this is before Carl Anderson joined the Bullet Club, though.
But I remember like watching stuff with that and just being amazed that...
It's funny because the tournament, you know, Anderson went to the finals a bunch of years ago.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so...
He had the match against...
Was it Nakamura? Nakamura?
Yes. Or Naito.
Talks about how Nakamura basically fed him for like a month.
I just read that recently.
Yeah.
I just read that, and that's powerful stuff. And there's something... There's something cool about, and it was making me think of when I was doing. I was reading a little bit up on it, with, you know, the New Japan style. We talked to Bad Luck Fale about, you know, the dojo system, and, you know, think about it, like how NXT is with WWE. Like New Japan's been doing this since the dawn of time.
Oh yeah,
the idea of homegrown stars and guys that you can trust and guys that you can work in your system. But I mean, the New Japan dojo is just far more strict, would be the right word, in the sense of you are taught respect and it is engraved into you. And even with, you know, and Carl Anderson had that great story where he, you know, he had no money to go out to eat. And it's like, you know, like that $14 in his pocket or whatever the case may be. And basically Nakamura feeding him for the next 6 months, you know. And like you hear those stories and you just go, and that's the beauty of why we like, you know, why we love this business is we could see it for more of guys in spandex doing flashy moves.
It's true.
You know, I was trying to explain it to the queen the other day, like where how pro wrestling is, I hate to use the F word, but choreographed, predetermined. Yes, but how everything else about the business is real. Like, yeah, you know, somebody determines if I'm going to win or lose. But you're still fighting. It's still competition in a sense.
Yeah.
You're still competing with the guy because like, oh, I'm going to go on first tonight. Yeah. Guess what? Try to top this, assholes. You know, that type of mentality, that is amazing to me. And, you know, so, you know, and going back and reading about it, it's making me appreciate and maybe yearn for more Japanese wrestling because of the even the match today, like we're gonna go, you know, we keep referencing it,
yeah,
but it's the, and even I you know, if had to pick a style, New Japan or All Japan, you know, there's something about that All Japan
King's Road
style, yeah. That storytelling, you know, they're long drawn out opuses, but when it's done right, oh, there's probably not much better wrestling than that to me.
I think this goes back to the conversation we had last week and the week before about what kind of fan are you? Like, are you a sports entertainment fan? Just a sports entertainment fan? Are you just a pro wrestling fan?
Yeah.
And can you be both? Like I can, you can. Some guys and girls can't do that. That's why there's constant hate on the current product.
Yeah.
Right? With this, you don't have to worry about that, though. This is professional wrestling. This is taken super seriously, and the system is different, the booking is different, and there's a respect for the game out there. Where it won't be compromised, even when they bring American wrestlers. But matter of fact, I watched some of Impact did a pay per view last night on the Plus,
mm-hmm.
And it was the main event was Kenny Omega against Moose. Omega retained,
yeah.
The Bucks helped him, right? But the match I loved the most was Kojima, who's a New Japan legend, right now.
Yeah.
And he fought Joe Doering, who's now an All Japan.
Yeah.
A legend. And it was like, that was the match I was looking forward to, because that was King's Road versus Strong Style. And it was like stiff. It was badass. And I was like, this is what I yearn for. You know, you can give me characters, you can give me a story, but if you got that bravado, man, if you got that stiff, strong style, if you got that technical King's Road, if you have, and guys like Great Muta and Saruta and, you know, Kobashi, Kawada, you know, Marufuji, like all these guys that did it, you know, it makes you appreciate the art. And people who are not fans of wrestling ask me, you know, how are you still into this? And I explain to them the best way. I'm like, it's like you go into a Broadway show and you're like, that actor, that actress, they have it. They have it. Or you go to a movie, they have it. You go to a concert, they still have it.
Yeah.
You know, or they don't have it, you know. Especially with musicians, we're very finicky. We're like, prove me wrong, you know. Yeah. Like, you know, prove, you cross your arms in the pit. You're like, this guy's, you know, whatever. But you know that's how I am now when I go to a wrestling match. I'm like, you can do that and still suspend your disbeliefs. This is the problem. This is the disconnect I have with the younger fans of our podcast and the genre. Like these fans. I don't think they, because everything's at their disposal. Pre-2005, we had to go dig.
Yeah.
Like crates. DJs call them digging the crates. We did DVDs and videotapes, right?
Well, think about like when you used to have to go, like you see a yard sale and you'd be like, yo, that guy, I don't know who this house is, but they could be a wrestling fan. I could find something fucking great in here. Magazines.
I can't tell you how many things I found. My Aunt Tracy's and my Uncle Mario, they're wonderful people. They live up in New England too. They live 20 minutes south of Boston. And they're very wealthy, and they were wealthy for a while. But my aunt would go to yard sales, and I was so, like, as a kid, like, why are you going to yard sales? You're, like, rich. Like, you're super rich, you know? And she's like, well, because I can find things that I don't have and what I want, and you just find treasures. And, like, I'd go with her, and I would find, like, old AWA magazines or tapes or, like, just, like... And there was bootleg stuff. I find figures, like whatever I found, you know. But yeah, man, it's like it's an art form.
I thought of a, you know, a great analogy for it. If you think of bands like the Rolling Stones, I can't, you know, Kiss to an extent, maybe, you know, but Kiss never really emphasized their new stuff, but. You know, these classic rock bands, you know, insert, you know, I'm a big 80s hair metal guy. So, like, you know, a band like Slaughter is always putting out albums. Tom Kiefer is always putting out albums. And they're doing it because that's their passion. Their passion is to write songs. But they're not looking to grab new fans. They're going out, and basically a new album, all it's doing is promoting the tour, and for fans like us to go see them and perhaps see, you know, obviously I want to see the old songs. Maybe I'll see something I like and I'll be fine. Something like this, you know, and this is probably a long way to stretch. Look at that old school.
That's awesome.
Old school logo.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, you see this old classic wrestling. And you just go, man, this is when it was so good for X amount of reasons.
Yeah.
And it's like the new bands are good, you know, they're good, but they're nothing like, you know, Judas Priest and 50
year anniversary.
You know, they're nothing like them. But, you know, you still go see those bands because you can still see a glimpse of
50
what it was.
Years Priest this year.
I know, right?
Right. But then like King Crimson is touring. I was a child. I was born when King Crimson was big,
yeah.
But they still tour. So it's like, you know, I told you a couple years ago, I saw Styx and Def Leppard.
Yeah.
I don't care if Styx puts out a new record. I want to hear Time on My Hands.
Yeah.
I want to hear fucking, I want to hear Babe and Mr. Roboto and
But that's like the thing with me is like, well, why, you know, why do you still, you know, how do you still watch it? It's like, well, simply because I'm a fan and I want to see the magic. That I like. It's like, why do you still listen to the band Kiss? Well, because they were fucking awesome.
Yeah, big documentary coming up at the end of the month with Kiss on A&E.
Yeah, I can't wait.
Two-parter.
And,
I'm excited.
But you know, it's because you we're us as fans, we're holding on to
nostalgia,
and it's hard. We always had this conversation about 80s basketball and today's basketball, where you know,
yeah.
You know,
different,
and it's
same with hockey.
It's two different things. It's
yeah.
two different animals.
Yeah,
and it's and the same could
wrestling.
Be the same could be said about professional wrestling.
So I mean, so and we're going on 9 years of doing nostalgia, and I don't mind holding on to that because you know what, it's like going to I'm going to a Broadway show. I'm going back to a Broadway show, and like I think we're going in October or September, mm-hmm. and it's like okay, I've seen the show already, but now the different actors and actresses in this,
yeah.
right? So it's like okay. I want to see the show again, but it's nothing is in pro wrestling. Nothing is new. Nothing.
No.
Everything is refurbished and everything is redone over by something else. Same thing with Hollywood. They're bringing back all these movies now.
Yeah.
And same thing with Broadway. They're keeping these shows on for 20. I think Cats was on Broadway for like 30 fucking years.
Yeah.
But it wasn't the same people.
But there's a reason why it was.
Right. So, like, you can tell it's Doc Hendricks. I love this. Watching In Your House, by the way, if you didn't realize it. But it's just, you know.
Hey, watching In Your House.
Yeah. But nostalgia, and but anything Japan in the 80s to, like, even the early 2000s, it's just, who was Naomi Fox?
I don't know, but.
Is she all the way live, Jay?
She's got a balcony you could do Shakespeare off of.
Yeah. I miss Choppy's bell, man.
I don't know whatever song she's singing. I guarantee you, it's
all
terrible.
The way live.
Whatever song she's rapping, it's terrible.
I don't care. We have it on mute, so we can fucking.
But
yeah, but you get the point. The point is that you know this when you find pieces of art in professional wrestling, like tonight's throwback, it reminds you of how great the genre is. And what it can be. And a lot of these guys are throwbacks. Like, you look at guys like Chris Dickinson.
Yep.
Guys like Homicide. You know, guys like that. Tony Depp and all the Ring of Honor guys. Guys like Daniel Bryan. Like, Cesaro. All these guys are like throwbacks. You know, it's like, those guys respect the old school. Samoa Joe respects the old school, you know? But, you know, you get glimpses of it. You don't get it, you know? And you get guys like New Japan. You got the Gorillas. You got the Dangerous Techers. You have all these teams. And
look at Todd Pettengill.
Look at this suit.
Stupid chin hair. He looks great though.
Good for him.
He's dyed his hair.
He's definitely in his 60s. He had one of the longest radio shows ever, man.
Yeah.
PLJ. Him. You know Scott Shannon's still working.
Of course he is. I think he fucked over Todd Pettengill a little bit.
Yeah, I heard that.
Because he was like, "Oh, I'm retiring. I've been in for 50 years."
And
then he goes
CBS,
to one old, yeah.
CBS owes him like a fucking. They throw him a bankload of money.
But I think Pettengill's got his own podcast or his own show somewhere else. Hey, I'm sure he ain't hurting for money. But hey, listen, and then like I said, this is a throwback to us. You know, this is stuff that you know. You think of like the first In Your House, you know, from 95 when they gave away the fucking house.
Yeah.
Right. And they called the
lady on the phone.
Yeah. You know. So like this is, and it's the same thing. It's like we're essentially, you know, it's the idea of when you first time you play sports, you know, and you line up on a 3-point line and you shoot a shot and you get it in. Every other time you shoot a basketball, you're chasing that same feeling. It's the thrill of how it made us feel, and we're constantly always going back to it because no matter how bad Monday Night Raw will ever be, we're still going to tune into the fucking pay-per-view. You know, like I said, barring something catastrophic happening.
You want to know why?
Because we're fans?
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. There's no other way to explain it. A true fan will never back away from it. You know, it's like I had a conversation with my father-in-law, my ex-father-in-law back in the day. He was like, you know, after 94, he stopped watching baseball.
Yeah.
Because of the strike.
After the strike.
Right? And I'm like, I can't let the politics get into it. I can't let things from the outside discourage me for stuff that I love. You know, wrestling is not what it's not catered to me. It's catered to my son. Mm-hmm. And his generation, you know, and you and Choppy's generation are like the last generation of the, you know, the Attitude Era, and you know that, back, you know, you're, and then in the early 2000s, you're like, by the time you're early 2000s, I was 30 years old at this point already. You know, yeah. I was like, you know, I was still watching my videotapes. To this day, I don't, you know, I haven't had regular cable in 2 years, 3 years. So I spend hours in my room sleeping to background noise of just clips of or wrestling or YouTube videos, you know.
Yeah.
The bottom line is that it's an art form, and it's the same way you watch a movie, a concert, or a show. It's like it's the same thing. It's these guys and girls who put on these amazing shows for us and entertain us, and there's a love, and you always remember your first, whether it's pussy or sports, like Jay said. Or your first concert, or your first anything. You'll always remember your first everything, you know. So this is nothing but nothing short of brilliant, though. Anything before we take a quick break?
I seen that Mark Henry was quoted on saying that he with AEW, there's interest on both sides between AEW and Braun Strowman going to AEW. What are your thoughts on that? I know we touched on it, but we can give it a little bit more in depth now that it's
honestly I won't even entertain it until he's got his 90 days up. You know, I want to see like Labor Day weekend he comes out and jumps Cody Rhodes. You know,
yeah.
if that's the case, if they're gonna bring him in, listen, and this is just AEW being like, hey, listen, we have Turner money, in essence, you know, I'm not mad at it. I like to see everybody have a job.
Yeah.
I'm about employment. I don't care. People need to feed their families, need to have a living and whatever, you know. Fans are like, oh, he shouldn't work. He shouldn't be, you know. That's like someone coming to your house telling you can't go to work tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, who the fuck are you, you know?
I guess it would be great to see. I don't want to see something long term. I feel like what he said, you know, was a little, out of school. Like, you shouldn't be talking about somebody's livelihood. I don't know. I'm old school. In
yeah,
that
but
sense.
All I know is that if you allow yourself to drink that Kool-Aid, you know what I'm saying? You're just as dumb as the dirt sheet kid. Posting stuff on our pages about, you know, about the nonsense, you know. I feel like you know, my intelligence is insulted when I read about, you know, these clickbait sites. You know, like, this guy's going here, this guy's going there. Listen, wrestling gets a little more exposure because of the streaming stuff and the internet and, you know, satellite radio that Mark Henry's a part of.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, I like that there's interest there, and I like that the fans are still interactive. But it's like, you know, I'm not really sold until I see him till his 90 days is up. You know, that's when I know that, you know, guys are, you know, he could show up on Impact. You don't know, you know.
Well, yeah.
Or Japan, he can go anywhere. Like, you know, but he's gonna work. You know, he's gonna work. He's got the size.
To me, I'm still yearning to see something of that nature. I want to see somebody go around from territory to territory. Because what's old is new again. That's the only thing that's the only thing that's going to kind of be different now.
Well, like, and we talked about with the last episode, let's see what Billy Corgan does now.
Yeah.
So, like, and like you said, I think you said it last week, everybody can play in a sandbox except for WWE.
Yeah.
So you'll have everybody. You'll have NWA and Ring of Honor and Impact and New Japan and, you know, AEW. These, if they're all going to play nice, winner-winner chicken dinner.
Yeah. Well, and that's the idea, and that's what's kind of, and we'll go into it with the throwback, but, like, you know, that's what's interesting about, you know, this time is that there were no borders. Everybody more or less played everywhere, and if you were working in New York, like, and you were like, hey, listen, such and such dates, you got to leave empty for me, I'm going back to Japan, it was more or less, like, it was okay. You know, so I like that stuff to me is interesting. There's no reason why it can't be like that today. You know, this especially, which is another conversation, the whole independent, you know, contractor thing, you know, it should be like that today,
yeah,
in
yeah.
essence. And that's why I'm interested in seeing the Matt Cardona fucking Nick Gage
right
thing. I'm this is something that's piqued my interest because of, you know, Matt Cardona, which I think everything is a work. You know, Matt Cardona apparently was talking shit about, you know, deathmatch wrestling. But I think he's such a smart dude when it comes to the business of professional wrestling, that knowing that you can go, whereas guys like Brian Pillman started it, where you can blur that line. He's doing it in a smart way, not being, you know, the loose cannon, but he's doing it where he's just going, oh, these guys are talking shit about me. I'm supposed to be apple pie, you know. Well, I ain't fucking a vanilla wrestler, like, and that type of thing. So to me, I'm interested in seeing what's going to happen. I think that's going to happen in Jersey too, which game changer, you know, could be something to go to. I think it's going to be fun. It may be at the Showboat, I think.
We'll get a date on that. Maybe we'll go.
I'll have to look at that.
Yeah, we'll definitely, if it's a date that I can go, we'll definitely go. I'll be in AC in August.
Hey now.
I'm going to see Michael Bublé, apparently.
Michael Bublé?
Yeah.
That guy's pretty good, actually.
Yeah, he's a Canadian crooner. anything else?
Nah, I think that's it, brother.
All right, let's take a quick break. Let's plug up pals. And we'll be right back. And listen to the Turnbuckle Throwbacks, episode 410. It's Phil. It's Jay. It's the chat room, hopefully. We'll live the tape. And we'll be right back. Take us away. Take it away, Alfred Hayes. Lord Alfred Hayes.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Everyone knows a lot of things can change in the span of 10 years. But when it comes to professional wrestling podcasting, one thing is still guaranteed. The Shining Wizards is the only place to get all the latest wrestling news, interviews with the greatest guests, and of course, tons of laughs in discussing the world of wrestling. The show is still available on Monday nights at 7 p.m. East on rantdmradio.com and Rant Entertainment Media on the TuneIn app. And it's still available on all podcasting platforms. To check us out, head over to ShiningWizards.com, where it's still wrestling talk and talk about wrestling.
Horns up, beautiful motherfuckers! Radioactive Metal is here on the Shining Wizards Network, and we want you to listen.
Every week, we cover the world of heavy metal and speak to your favorite bands.
We discuss new releases, concerts, controversies, and everything else that's related to heavy metal.
And occasionally, we even talk about pro wrestling.
Catch us live every Thursday night on PureRockRadio.net.
Listen to past episodes at radioactivemetal.org or at shiningwizardsnetwork.com.
And remember, it's not metal unless it's radioactive metal.
Are you tired of being told what to think and believe by Hollywood elites and politicians who just don't care about you?
Tired of not getting the truth when you watch the news?
Tired of trying to figure out what pronoun to use?
Tired of mob mentality when all you want to do is think for yourself and make up your own mind?
That's where we come in. This is Justin.
And Vince.
Your host of Inconclusive Breakdown.
We are a weekly anti-PC podcast bringing you entertainment and current event news without any spin.
If you want to truly stay informed on what's going on in the world, then give us a listen every Sunday, anywhere you get podcasts, at least till Zuckerberg and Twitter Jack deplatform us.
And as always, we're proud members of the Shining Wizards Network.
Tired of the PC police telling you what you can and cannot say? Want a show that travels back to the 80s and 90s, where the badass hosts have beaten down cancel culture on three separate occasions and carried on to gloat about it? Since 2013, The Midnight Jury is that show. Travel back to the malls and arcades, pop in your VHS, and join us where the 80s and 90s return from the dead. Conan, tell them where to find us.
WLWstudios.com, home of the Midnight Jury podcast, hosted by Midnight Mike and Calvin Brody.
Also available on all major podcast platforms via the Shining Wizards Network, and join in the conversation on Twitter at Midnight Jury.
This is Great Muta, and you are listening to the Turnbox Throwback with Phil Lea and that pain in the Astropion Light in M Radio.
Ichiban Hogan-san.
Isn't this something? What a find.
This is a 7-inch that was released.
If you ask Hogan, I bet you he played bass on this.
Yeah, like he tried out for Metallica.
Yeah. I'm telling you, man. Recent weeks, we've been doing a lot of Hogan stuff, and more so in Japan. It's hard to say. I talk a lot of shit about Hogan, but man, I am fucking impressed with him as of lately.
This is the 7-inch that was recorded. All right, we'll stop that. Listen, I don't have to like Hulk Hogan to acknowledge his accolades and stuff that he's done. I mean, if it wasn't for Hulk Hogan, you wouldn't have half the stuff you have on television. So
yeah, without a doubt.
So anyway, we're back. It's Phil. It's Jay. Episode 410, Turnbuckle Throwbacks. Special Father's Day edition. Shout out to all the dads out there. If you still have your dad, be thankful.
Yeah, happy Dad's Day.
Yeah, I miss mine immensely. Never watched wrestling with me, but he understood. Still watch that stuff? Yeah, Papa, I still watch it. He's fucking nuts. Yeah, man, so this is what it is. Are you ready for your throwback?
I'm ready.
And now, here is your throwback of the week. Sponsored by the Shining Wizards Network and Rant EM Radio.
I got a question for you. Is this from the Dome or is this from Currican Hall?
It's from Currican Hall, I believe.
All right. Currican Hall is like the ECW arena of Japan.
Yeah.
So 38 years ago last week, 2 weeks ago, I should say, Hulk Hogan made history as the first IWGP champion in New Japan Pro Wrestling. But not only did he bring huge exposure to New Japan, but it also changed the direction of wrestling history, right? As Jay looks up the location. This is June 2nd, right, Jay, 83?
June 2nd it is.
Okay. So Hogan was part of a 10-man tournament in 83 called the IWGP League. That tournament involved it's the precursor to the G1, right?
Yep.
Okay. So it involved a multitude of top-level wrestlers from all over the world. Other participants included, obviously, Antonio Inoki, who we'll talk about tonight. UWA World Champion, Kinect, Mexican wrestler.
Yep.
And, of course, Eastern European CWA Heavyweight Champion, Otto Wanz, who was big in Europe. And he had a promotion. Vader worked for him. A lot of guys worked for
JBL always
a lot of guys. Yeah, a lot of guys worked for it. And Rob Van Dam worked over there, I believe. But Inoki wanted the best wrestlers from far and wide to enter this tournament in hopes of making the most prestigious contest and prizes possible, right? And his plan was to bring in these high-profile stars to New Japan, and he, being New Japan's main star, would beat them all. But that's not what happened this night. Hogan was the heel and was in the finals against Inoki. And Hogan became the first ever IWGP champion, not to be confused with the IWGP Heavyweight Championship, which is
yes,
which didn't exist till 1989,
which was my original thought.
Correct.
1987. Sorry,
Hogan wins his first title in any promotion. This is right before January of 1984. This was the Rocky time. This is the AWA time where he was the top face in the company, as Bronson Reed just pins the Mexicans.
Yeah, we had a feeling that they were going to hold on to the
belt. We call that. So Hogan was in the AWA at this point, right? And real quick, he was going up against Bockwinkel, who was the champion. They never gave him the belt, my opinion, because Vern Gagne wanted a piece of his Japan money. And at that point, wrestlers were selling their own gimmicks, and Vern Gagne wanted a part of that and didn't want him to do the Rocky movie.
Well, actually, what was happening was, too, is you're right, they started selling merch, and Vern was getting too much of, and he was getting too much of the money for that, where he should have been, you know, arguably maybe a little bit more given to his wrestlers. But that being said, he they did another squish thing with Bronson Reed, and I always want to call him King Cuerno. I always want to call him that.
That's what I call him.
But, you know, with that, the times were changing here for Hogan realized, I think he always puts over Vern, how much he did for him and where Hulkamania truly started. You know, it was in Minnesota, but Hogan is very, very smart, especially to this business.
Breaking news, pop culture-wise, I'm sorry to break it in, but Ned Beatty passed away.
Ned Beatty, wow.
He played in Deliverance.
Yeah.
He was Otis in Superman. Mr. Luthor.
Whoa.
Back to School, he was Rudy. He was in Rudy. And he was also John Goodman's dad on Roseanne.
Yes, that's where I remember him from.
I'm sorry, Jay, carry on.
But
rest in peace, Ned.
But it shows you Hogan, there's very few guys in his business, and, you know, this is just my perspective on it, who know their worth. I I know a lot of them do, and probably everybody knows what they can do, but Hogan, especially, would, you know, knew what he was doing in the sense of how he performed. If you watch his Japan stuff, and we've talked about it on the show, his Japan stuff is just head and shoulders far better than anything he's ever done.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, so Hogan goes back to the E. Vince signs him, and he goes back to Japan in December of 1983.
Yeah.
Right? And he's still IWGP champion.
Yep.
So he won. And then, of course, you all know what happens a month later, January of 1984. Hogan wins. You know, Hulkamania is born. But he carried that belt until June of 1984. So, mm-hmm. You know, it's tonight we're going to talk about that match. And Hogan never won a world title before that, so.
Yeah, and it's, like you said, it's kind of, you know, he was a big deal in AWA.
And he would never have won a title if he stayed.
He probably wouldn't have. There's no shot he would have.
Todd Pettengill popping VHS tapes.
Especially in, you know how many of those I've thrown out, the TVs with the VCR connected to it?
Yeah,
those things were hot back in the day, man.
But they sucked because if they broke, you couldn't fix them.
You couldn't fix anything,
right? They were so fucking all one piece.
Those things were screwed. And it's like that, and it's like the old school TVs with the wood frame. That if that TV blew out, you just put the new TV
right
on top of it.
My friend's mom had the TV with the phonograph player in it. And yes. This thing was like 7,000 pounds. But anyway. Yeah, Hogan would never win a title if he would have stayed in the AWA.
Yeah, I mean, the AWA in and of itself just was still doing well here, but it was, you know, it wasn't the juggernaut that was going to be WWE. It was no Jim Crockett, but, you know, it had its stronghold.
Of course.
But, yeah, you're right. Vern was too stubborn in his booking mindset sometimes but Hogan at least knew, you know, about making money going out to Japan, where, you know, he knew that he didn't have to be pigeonholed into one territory. And especially when he went to Vince Sr. at that point, he's already done a few things in the WWF. But this proves that, you know, Hogan knew where to go. And even Inoki, for that matter, who Inoki is just can do no wrong in Japan, especially at this time. I mean, you got a Japanese crowd chanting your name. You just coming out.
Hogan's claim to fame in the E before this was the undercard of the Shea Stadium, the mega show.
Yeah.
With Bruno and Zbyszko.
Yep.
He was him and Andre got it on that night. So I mean, this was a deal. So the first thing is that we notice about the match is that Hogan is not only he's a heel, but he has the Ichiban logo on, like he's number one. That's his gimmick.
I said to Phil, it was like, yo, did he invent the Bullet Club before the Bullet Club?
He's got black and white tights on with silver boots.
Listen here, dude,
looking like all sorts of evil, and he looked good.
Yeah,
man.
He looked, and I think he looked to be about 300 pounds because he just looked to be in such shape.
I thought he was a little less than that. They're like 270, 265, but I tell you, they billed him as three. When he came to the E, they billed him as 302 pounds.
Yeah.
I don't know if he was 300. I don't know. He might have been.
He might have been in the early days. Here, he looked trim.
Well, no, they had him as 300 pounds when he won the title.
Yeah. And from Iron Sheik.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But he looked trim here, and he looked in great shape. And I mean, let alone the hairstyle too. I mean, he was going bald, but
no, but he looked good, man. He looked good.
And the crowd, and he played a really good heel. But you know, one thing that jumped out with the match too was let alone Hogan working, he was selling, like he was selling his ass off.
Well, I mean, you have to understand something. Antonio Inoki is a legend, you know, and when he broke away from Baba and started New Japan and made himself and booked himself as the star, he was the Hulk Hogan of that era.
Yeah. Oh, big time.
Right, and the crowd was like hot for Inoki. But Hogan got the love. That was the thing too. Like in Japan, the heels got love. The heels still get love.
Yeah,
you know, it's not like they know who the hero is, right? But if a good heel, every hero needs a villain, no matter what story you're reading, whether it's a comic book, wrestling match, a movie, whatever. Every wrestling match needs a hero and a villain, right? But if you bring a good enough villain in, and now at this point, Hogan has a little bit of notoriety. They know who he is.
Mm-hmm.
That's why Inoki brought him in. So now it's like Inoki wants to showcase all these guys, and you know Hogan's not the first guy Jinder to walk in there and make a big deal. You have to understand Brody, Hanson,
Abdullah,
the Funks.
Yeah,
you know. So the Japan's been Holly Race. Japan's been, I mean, going strong.
But it's no secret that Inoki loved the big. The big guys, you know,
big fight, the big
Abdullah's, Killer Khan,
right.
Andre.
He liked what Vince liked back in the day. He liked the big man, you know. So who else is bigger? And Hogan just did Rocky.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, he's a Hollywood. You know, I don't know. I know distribution is different with Hollywood with movies in overseas. I don't know if Japan gets those movies first, they get them last. I don't know how it works over there, but they had to have seen Rocky or read that he was Thunder Lips,
in it, yeah.
Which I actually have a figure of him. I have to show you. I have it packed away in my closet. I have Thunder Lips. Comes with the derby and the big robe.
Yeah,
but you got to understand something. It's different vibe. This is 1983. Okay.
Yeah.
And this was before New Japan was a thing. This was still New Japan was still in its infancy. New Japan at this point was only 11 years old. I think 72 was their first year.
72, yeah.
Right? So, I mean, it's a deal, right? So, I mean, let's get to the match a little bit. I mean, it's not a long match.
No, it was about over 20 minutes.
About 20 minutes, yeah.
Which, I mean, listen, for Hulk Hogan standards, and there was rest holds in this, and it was action. And it was, and it once again, that different style. It was a competition. And Kevin Kelly. So we watched the American commentary on it, and Kevin Kelly did a great job. It is funny to think about. He was getting excited for certain. Parts of the match, which was kind of good too, but they were talking about how the tournament was a month long. It started in early May. I think it started around May 1st, May 2nd.
Yeah.
And, it was in Corum. I have it right here.
Kurikan Hall.
No, it was in, Kurame Korku. Oh God. Kokugan or something like that. I don't know where that is. Obviously, Japan, but 13,000 people here.
That's Kurikan Hall.
Is that? Is that Corrigan?
Yeah, Kurikan.
Koku.
K O U R.
No, K O K I G H A N. Kurikan.
Oh, so it wasn't a Kurikan Hall. Okay.
No, it wasn't Kurikan. I thought it was Kurikan Hall myself.
You heard all 13,000 people.
Yeah, and before, as soon as the bell rang, too.
Oh yeah.
So, and then, like you said, we had Bullet Club Hogan.
Bullet Club Hogan. And you mentioned it. I don't want to go blow by blow because it's not really. I mean, it's not.
No, exactly. It's
and everybody has seen the match. It's not like it's just not like a secret. But what Jay brought out before I did the selling that Hogan did, and Inoki right away going for like the high caliber high pro like he went for an enziguri real quick and Hogan backed away from him. Test the strength. There was a He had obviously Inoki was out muscled, and he knew it.
Yeah.
And Inoki's got a martial arts background, legitimately. So I feel like he uses those like the judo flips and the hip tosses and stuff like that. He couldn't throw Hogan around like this though.
Well, and that was the thing about it too was that he couldn't really throw him around. Although, and it's funny how. Everybody talks about it, how wrestling, no selling, this and that. Like I'm not saying that there was a whole bunch of it here, but there was little hints of it, but it's two major stars. That's the idea about it, is that these guys were, especially Inoki. Like, Inoki's not losing to anybody unless needed.
Unless he decides to.
Yeah.
He's everything. He's the owner, the booker, the promoter.
Yeah, and he was laying it into Hogan, and you could see a few of them. You could see a few shots that landed, and Hogan sat there, took it, dished it out.
Right,
great mat wrestling to start off. It's something to be said about that style of, Inoki's he's no slouch too. He's about 6'3", 6'4".
Yeah.
And he's got Hogan down on the mat, and Hogan's selling, and then Hogan's reversing, and it's great to see
a little bit of chain wrestling. You see,
where there's the Hogan that we know, there's none of that, and midway through the match, it starts getting a little bit more physical, where Inoki goes for his patented slap. Where he connected with Hogan right to the face.
Yeah.
And Kevin Kelly called it a palm strike, but goddamn, he just fucking bitch slapped him. Hogan shot in, and Inoki said, "Not today, bitch.
Not
just
today.
Fucking got him.
Not today, buddy."
Oh, it was good, but You know, and then it kept going, and the crowd just ate it up. And, you know, Hogan did this great thing, especially as the bigger guy, taking a powder a few times, going out to the ring, gathering his thoughts, taking a breath.
Classic heel move.
You know, and the crowd was reacting to that, and Hogan wasn't really healing too much to the crowd. But that like you said, that move in and of itself is a heel tendency. So
right.
And I love seeing that. And as it got on, Hogan hit him with the axe bomber, came off the ropes, flew right at him and hit him hard. And the first, you know, and Inoki kicks out at two, and Hogan sells it.
Yeah.
Like Hogan looked at the ref. You know, Kevin Kelly was mentioning that, you know, there was a little, the referee looked like he was kind of favoring Inoki, but it if you think of it in that sense, he wasn't favoring him as much as he was trying to look out for the Japanese hero.
Sure.
You know?
Sure.
And
yeah,
that plays into the story at the end of the match, you know? And then after the axe bomb, he hits him. Hogan, me and Phil both popped when Hogan left his feet for a drop kick.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
You know?
And then he threw a suplex.
Yeah.
And well, before that, he threw an axe bomb.
Yep.
Which was his finisher in Japan.
Yes.
But he didn't go for a pin at that point.
Yeah. And he hit him with the leg drop as well and had no idea what the leg drop, you know, would turn out to be his.
That was his finisher in the States, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he hit him with that, and same thing, kicked out at two. And you could see Hogan almost at frustration, almost at wit's end, you know, looking, going, what am I going to have to do to beat him? And Inoki, Inoki goes to throw a drop kick, and Hogan kind of looked like it was supposed to hit because Hogan bumped. But
yeah.
Kevin Kelly did a great job of covering it, going, well, you know, he was just trying to shield himself from the dropkick, but it looked like a misstep. But after that, Inoki got hit to the outside, and he works his way up to the... Hogan hits him with an axe bomber to the back of the neck, and Inoki shoots him into the post. Inoki's knocked a little loopy. He gets up to the apron, and Hogan runs into the ropes and hits him with the axe bomber onto the floor.
Yes.
Completely KOs. It took all the young boys in the front. And me and Phil are trying to figure out. The only one that we can kind of notice was possibly Fujinami. That's the only thing.
Not Fujinami.
Tenryu. Sorry.
Tenryu, yeah.
Tenryu. And
Tenryu's got that fro. You
yeah.
know?
Yeah. And... But it took all the young boys to pick up Onoki's lifeless body to get him in the ring, not moving.
Yeah, the crowd is now not cheering.
Yes.
The crowd is now 13,000 people like silent at this point. You hear some commotion. Like Jay said, the young boys could bring him. They get him back into the ring, right? And
he's not moving.
He's not moving at all. He's selling it.
And this is like a... This was a cool, especially for 83, that this is happening, that, you know, it's a work, you know, essentially a work shoot stretcher job, you know, where.
Yeah.
These never happened in this time frame where guys are playing that hurt. And it was hook, line, and sinker. The crowd ate into it. The crowd was silent.
And they're trying to package him now. There's no medical equipment. They bring out some kind of scoop stretcher from like 1972.
Well, before that they had smelling salts, and then they had the doctor hook up the, I don't know what the thing for the blood pressure is called.
Blood pressure cuff. Yeah, it's a cuff.
And then they had him break out a syringe. I don't know if Inoki's, he's like getting hit with up some steroids or some adrenaline
or
something.
Adrenaline or something. Yeah.
But he's giving him a syringe in the middle of the ring. It was actually pretty awesome. And,
right.
But and then at this point the referee called for the bell, and Hogan's walking around going, "Hey man, listen, raise my hand." And you know, it was a little commotion, which added to the confusion of it.
Right, and then this is what the genius is about it, and this is what you spoke about before about the story being told. Here's the story being told. They bring in Nihil, and Nihil has a mutual respect for their face.
Yes.
Right? And it's like, okay, I know who you are. You know who I am. We're going to get it on for the champ, for this championship, this inaugural championship, right? As Mercedes Martinez gets mugged by a Chinaman.
Yeah.
But now it's like you have this look of concern on Hogan's face, like, what did I just do?
Yeah.
Did I just break Japan? Mm-hmm. Because if you, again, Inoki is like what Hulk Hogan will be in a couple of months.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
Right. It's Inoki mania. You know what I'm saying? In essence, right? And this is Ichiban, heel Hogan, I'm the best. I just recorded some shitty records.
Yeah.
Right? But it's like, this is Hogan being like, oh my God, I think I just killed Antonio Inoki.
Yeah.
And you know, how this goes in Japan, when you win a big tournament, you get the trophies, and you get the streamers, and you get the titles, and you get sometimes they give you a certificate, like a citation almost.
Yeah.
Right? And it's like, they have, and now all the officials of New Japan are in the ring, and the one official's telling Hogan what's going on, he's like, okay, now he's bowing. Every time somebody walks over to him, he's bowing.
Yeah.
You notice that? He bows to everybody who talks to him or hands him something. So there's this overselling of respect for the face wrestler it's almost like it was
a face turn for Hogan.
Like Hogan's remorseful, even though he's got to go back and defend that title again and months down the line. But it's like you have a sense of wow, and the fans are like, wow, this gaijin piece of shit just walked in here and killed our hero.
Yep.
And that's what's, and now they have to wait, like, you know, on they have to wait to see what's going on. There's no internet now.
But they almost, in a sense, at the end, they almost, especially when the belt came in and the trophy came in, like the crowd got behind because they seen Hogan's concern for Inoki, so they're saying that he's not a complete piece of shit heel, you know, American. He cares about our culture. He cares about our hero. And like you said, in the spirit of competition, this is just what happened. You know, like this kind of thing happens. Inoki did a great selling job. At one point, his tongue is hanging out in the sense of he was face down and his tongue was hanging out. And it's like he has no control of his organs. Like it's or, you know, his body parts or whatever the case. Like, I really caught that part of storytelling and I really enjoyed it. Like that's something that's, you know, it's small, the minute details of that is great to see. And, you know, you could see Hogan, like you said, bowing down especially when he gets the belt and the trophy. You know, he holds it up and the flash bulbs are going off, and you know, it was really good to see, you know, that kind of story be told. And And fascinating, too, because like you said, this is all before any sort of Hulkamania happens. You know, we had a small glimpse in AWA, but
nah.
Hogan doesn't win the belt until, what, December of 84?
January 23rd, 1984.
Yeah. And he's as soon as he wins the belt in 84, January 84, he goes right back to Japan.
In June.
I think in February.
Well, no, he doesn't lose till June.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But he
goes right back in February, correct?
Yeah, he goes right over there. He starts entering, you know, tag matches. I think it's the World Tag League, and yep. He's going as the WWF champion. And it shows you with Hogan how his appeal, especially stateside, you know, he becomes this big star, but this starts that whole transition of American style and Japanese style, especially for Hogan, because now Hogan knows what makes money here, and he definitely knows what makes money in Japan, because he's over there for weeks at a time.
Yeah.
And so I love this match. I'm really gonna try to push forward to watch more of Hogan. You know, watch more, but more New Japan stuff, and
yeah,
especially the older stuff where, you know, you're not, you watch today's product, and we touched on it a little bit, you watch today's product and you're letting yesteryear, you know, sour what's happening now as we're watching a promo for LA Knight against Cameron Grimes, a match that I'm looking forward to.
Yeah.
You know, but you watch the product now and constantly thinking about what happened in yesteryear, like, yeah, that's fine and dandy, but when stuff is new, and like you said, that whole injury angle with Inoki and stuff, like, I mean, granted, now it these days it's somebody gets hurt and the stretcher comes out, the first thing you think of is like, oh, this is part of the show. Nobody was doing that then.
No, and it's mainstream there.
Yes.
Like, it'll make the media, it'll make, like, you know, it'll make the magazines and the newspapers, yep. And, you know, oh my God, Inoki's injured, you know, is what's going to happen? Can he wrestle again? And he comes back as the hero and he saves the day. But that's why you watch this stuff, man. That's what makes me so love this, the old stuff. And as they're showing DiBiase, the history of the Million Dollar Championship.
Yes.
Another great character. You can build characters and you can do it right. And I know it's, like I said, we talked about this in the first hour of the show. It's not built for us anymore. But yeah. This stuff is art. Mm-hmm. And the stuff that we'll talk about tonight is what makes us fans.
Yeah, the match was about 20-21 minutes and there really was no slow spots. There was nothing but, I mean, we were kind of, we were both doing our Hogan impression, and I kept calling him how he invented the Bullet Club. You know,
that's funny.
I'm just gonna try to get that over now.
Yeah, that's funny.
But I have an unbelievable newfound respect for Hogan in the sense of. Watching that match with Muda in 93 and this match in 83, you know, this guy really, he really was I don't want to say just a businessman and a professional, but you could tell a fan too, and you could see his respect. Like he, you know, this type of thing. And, you know, he got trained in 77 and this is now 83, 6 years later. Like this guy's not even scratched his potential, you know, and it wasn't until a year or so later where it really came to fruition.
100%. So there you go. There you have it. This is the precursor to Hulkamania, and this is the Hulk Hogan that basically earned his right to be Hulkamania. You know, he had the look. He can talk. And
he had the charisma, you know.
Right, and he didn't have to do all the stuff he did in Japan. It's a different thing, and that's not what Vince wanted. Vince didn't want him to wrestle. Vince wanted him to entertain.
Yep.
And that's basically what he did, and he made a life for it. Made himself a career out of it. So,
kudos.
Kudos to Hulk Hogan, and kudos to Inoki and all Japan, New Japan, all those.
And you know, reading before the show, Inoki's not in the best of health right now. I think they admitted him back in the hospital for... I forget what it's called, but it's like when your intestines go upside down or something.
There's diverticulitis? No.
It's not that. Something along those lines, well, but...
Keep the legend in your prayers. Yep. And these guys are not getting any younger. Hogan's already, almost 70.
Yeah, if not over, yeah.
Yeah, he's a little older than my mom, I think. So, but yeah, just keep these guys. I mean, these guys are treasures in our little world, you know. So, are we done? Are we good? I mean,
yeah, I'm gonna say we are.
All right, cool. Listen, guys, I want you to have a great. And if you're a dad, enjoy your dad's day.
Yes, absolutely. Dads, stepdads.
Yeah.
If you're a father figure of any sort to anybody,
yeah,
you deserve this day.
If you haven't spoke to your dad in a while, give him a call. You know, trust me, it'll be 20 years I lost my father, and I wish I could get one more time with him, you know?
Yep.
So you guys will have a great rest of your week. And you know all the social media handles. You know all the Pro Wrestling Tees gimmicks. And we'll be back live again next week. Same bad time, same bad channel. And remember, man, just be a good fan.
Yeah.
Be a good fan. Don't be a jerk off.
Just be a fan.
Yeah, just be a fan. And we'll see you guys next week. Don't forget to watch all the other... Watch a lot of wrestling. That's pretty much it, man. Say goodnight, Gracie.
Goodnight, Gracie.